Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Bruno Barron, Dan Johnson, Tim Krolaitis, and Lou Wang. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo, @DUMO. And if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com. There are 8 days to go before the Iowa caucus, 288 days to go before election. For the next 2 hours, we have lots to talk about. We've got four great guests who are really interested in the Republican and Democratic primaries, and we're going to have a good old-fashioned Donnybrook. I would like to begin also by I want to just make one comment, because for the last several months on this program, we have presented to you an Illinois activist by the name of Doug Ibendahl. Doug is known within the state as pretty much of a flamethrower. And last night, Doug sent me a little tweet and also sent me a link to some speeches by Donald Trump. Yesterday, Donald Trump in Iowa on two occasions read a letter that Doug Ibendahl had sent him. And he went on and on about Doug Ibendahl's letter. It was in the middle of that tirade. Was when he made his comment, you know, I could shoot someone in the middle of Times Square and my supporters wouldn't hold it against me. That part is what has made all the news today about the latest Trumpism. But again, our friend Doug Ibendahl was able to get the attention of Donald Trump. So he'll be here next week to talk about it, because I would assume that our guests tonight aren't going to say many good things about Donald Trump. But again, we have our phone callers at 1-800-723-8289. I want to talk a little bit about the Democrats this evening. We have two men who would like to be a delegate, one for Bernie Sanders, one for Hillary Clinton. And I want to begin with you, Lou Lenk, because it's been a long time since you've been on this program. You are a deputy leader of the Illinois Senate, longtime Democrat. You are for Hillary Clinton, but at this moment, as a political commodity, I heard someone saying the other day that they thought that Hillary Clinton, if she got the nomination, would be one of the most damaged candidates going into a general election in the last 35 years. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that at all. Here's a person who will be, when she becomes president, the most experienced person who has ever taken over the White House. Her roles over the years, the experience she's gained, has put her in a position where when she's president, she'll be able to hit the ground running.
But with experience comes a track record. You don't think there's anything in her track record as Secretary of State that would cause some people to question her? And some people have questioned whether they believe her or not.
Most of the time, the people who are questioning anything about any candidate are the opponents. So you see a lot of Democrats, even those who are for Bernie Sanders, aren't really dumping all of that malarkey on Hillary Clinton. They just think that they have the right ideology for their candidate. You don't hear the Bernie Sanders people talking about these issues that the Republicans talk about relative to Hillary Clinton.
Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York, has said that he is flirting with the idea of running as an independent. He is concerned that if Donald Trump is the Republican nominee and Bernie Sanders is the Democratic nominee, he may throw his hat in the ring. As a Bernie Sanders supporter, how do you react to the fact that yet another billionaire
get
in the way of Bernie Sanders going to the White House?
You know, that's the point. I don't think another billionaire trying to shape politics will get in the way. I think it'll help prove the point. I think one of the reasons why there's so much enthusiasm and so much interest from people that haven't been engaged in politics before is they're sick of the billionaires shaping our politics. We've got a governor in our state of Illinois that's been shaping politics far too much. And I think with the middle class getting under increasing economic pressure, there's a real hunger for somebody who's willing to stand up and say we need to reinvest in the middle class again.
Question to you. Is Bernie Sanders electable?
I think Bernie Sanders is electable, but I think it's more difficult to elect him than it is to elect Hillary Clinton.
Tim Carlitis, we're going to go over to the Republican side. You're a Tea Party guy. Yeah. And also Bruno Barron joins us tonight, our other Republican. Yes, can Bernie Sanders be elected president?
I hope not.
Okay. But
there'd be a huge cultural change to take on a 74-year-old socialist.
What does your gut tell you?
No, not at all.
Okay. I kind of lean Tim's direction, but you can't really write anybody off at this point in time. This is a very strange year. A lot of different things have happened this year to make things in a deep state of flux. The word socialist ranks lower than jihadist on many people's scale of when they what they like and what they don't like about specific words.
For Republicans.
Actually, this is across the board in the United States. This is all voters. So that's a hill that Bernie Sanders is going to have to climb. But if you've watched Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton both struggle with Chris Matthews asking what the difference between a Democrat and a socialist is, you can also see two different things going on in this country. I think the American populace is in flux, and if properly presented, they could move sharply to the left, even though they could also, in this election cycle, move sharply to the right.
What is a socialist, Dan?
Well, from Bernie's definition of a democratic socialist, it's somebody that believes that college should be free like high school, that health care should be free just like Medicare is largely free, that the standard of living that Northern Europe largely enjoys is something that Americans ought to largely enjoy as well.
Would he protect the country?
Absolutely.
Would he send drones out? Would he keep up the president's drone strikes against
Probably less of that, I'd imagine. I think his, as he said, he's a little bit less into regime change than Secretary Clinton has been.
How about protecting the American people?
Yeah, and you know what? The way you mostly protect the American people is not by invading other countries, which is what Republicans are doing.
How about killing your enemies before they kill you? Is that something that a socialist could agree to?
Yeah, absolutely. And Bernie's been clear. I don't think there's a tremendous amount of difference.
Would you feel comfortable if he was the commander-in-chief, Lou?
I'm for Hillary Clinton because
you're
I think...
You're for Hillary Clinton,
because
you're also a big supporter of the state of Israel.
Would
he be a big supporter of the state of Israel?
I assume that Bernie Sanders would be a big supporter. I assume that every candidate running for president is a strong supporter of the state of Israel. It's one of our closest allies in the world and our bastion in the Middle East, and we have to support them. But let me add one thing about this socialist tag. Whatever you call Bernie Sanders or whatever you call any candidate, whatever label you put on them, it's what they want to do that matters, not what you call them. So you could call them a socialist or you could call them not a socialist.
That word is used just
to scare people.
He uses it himself. I want to ask this. Again, we don't have Trump supporters here tonight, but we have some Cruz fans here. And for Bernie Sanders, if Bernie Sanders got elected, would he have a Congress that would allow him to do anything he's talked about? And the same thing for Donald Trump. If Donald Trump got elected president of the United States, would he be able to do anything he talks about?
Here's the point.
That's the question. We got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. We have a lot of supporters who are real strong supporters for Bernie Sanders, real strong supporters for Donald Trump, and also a little bit for Ted Cruz. I'm talking about the one where there's real fire in the belly, at least based on the candidacies that have been portrayed thus far. And I want to find out, are the true believers that are listening and watching the show tonight, do you really believe that your candidate can accomplish what he or she promises? Back shortly.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlink's now at 888-880-TREE. Rich Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8029. Let's talk about some of the things that Donald Trump wants to do. Again, you're not, neither of you are for Donald Trump, but realistically, even if it was Ted Cruz, would Ted Cruz be able to do half of what he says he's going to do, working with the Congress and working with the Senate, that he's called the Senate Majority Leader a liar? Tim?
Probably not, but I think what happens is what's occurring is there's an establishment and there's folks within the party, primarily the base, that are pushing back against the establishment. So maybe it's not a one and done, but maybe if you get somebody like Cruz in there, it helps to leverage the cause of a lot of the conservatives.
But how do you go about leveraging it? I mean,
the bully pulpit is not a bad place to start.
It seems to me that if you like gridlock, the candidate for you is Ted Cruz. He can ensure gridlock in Washington.
For any of that to happen, and this is what I'm so skeptical about, that person has to win.
Yes.
I can see a set of scenarios where maybe Trump could become president. I'm actually, even though Ted Cruz is more of a conservative and more of a Republican, I'm actually more skeptical that Ted Cruz can actually win an election. And both Trump and Cruz supporters have this idea that once they're nominated, 10 or 15 or 30 million invisible conservatives who have not shown up for decades are going to immediately come out of the woodwork and create a massive – and they talk about 1980 and Reagan. It's just not going to happen. There's plenty of goodwill for some conservative policies. There's centrists, and then there's Democrats who might cross over, and they're not going to cross over for Ted Cruz.
I want to share something because I've said on this program for the last several months that I think there's three candidates that can be elected president: Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, and Donald Trump. Those are the only three I think that can win. I've said it over and over again, but I want to admit publicly now something. That there was some evidence presented to me today that has made me think twice about my almost instant reaction when I've said, I don't think Ted Cruz can win. I've made the case many times that I think Donald Trump can win because he can expand the base. I think there's some appeal to some blue-collar Democrats, even to some African-Americans, even to Hispanics. I think this, because he is a celebrity, he's a unique personality. He's not an ideologue, which, again, is being held against him by some, but I think that's one of the positive things about him. Plus, he's a celebrity, and he carries himself like a leader, even though he says a lot of really dumb things. But this was on Meet the Press today. Take a look at this. This was a measurement of favorability ratings. And let's look at Ted Cruz first. Among African Americans, Ted Cruz has a 20% unfavorability rating. Donald Trump, a 72% unfavorability rating. Amongst Latinos, an 11% unfavorable rating for Ted Cruz, 47% again for Donald Trump. For women, only a 1% unfavorable rating for Ted Cruz, 36% unfavorable for Donald Trump. Amongst independent voters, 22% unfavorably view Ted Cruz, 26% view Donald Trump unfavorably. And for suburban voters, which is where a lot of elections are won, suburban voters, there's a minus 4% for Ted Cruz. 24% of suburban voters have an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump. Now, when I saw that today, I said, maybe I'm not as smart as I think I am. Maybe I'm misreading this.
Can I just have one really quick comment on that, and then anybody else can jump in there? For the Republican to win, at least three of those categories have to be much closer to positive, which means that neither of them are electable.
Okay, well, that's a very good point, which is why you are for. Let's find out where our Republicans are.
Rubio or Kasich?
You're split.
And Kasich is climbing in New Hampshire right now. He could actually do very well. If he does well in New Hampshire, if he comes in second or beats Trump, which is an outside possibility at this point, Kasich is I think he's the one that the Democrats are most worried about.
We said a couple of weeks ago that if someone finishes third in each of those first two, they become the establishment candidate.
Perhaps.
Tim Kralidis, who are you for?
I'm personally for Cruz. However,
are you worried about some of these ratings?
Yeah, you always worry about those ratings. But I mean,
who's your other guy?
Marco Rubio.
Okay, so we haven't seen this test with Marco Rubio.
So Rubio's both our second.
Is Rubio the one that you would fear most to run against Liu Lang as a Democrat?
I think he makes a good case for himself from the Republican point of view,
okay.
But I think Kasich does as well. In fact, at the debates, I've thought Kasich has been the best Republican debater. I think he's come out the best. But I have a little bit of a different point of view on all this.
Sure.
as a non-Republican observing,
yeah.
This. I think Cruz and Trump are going to beat the heck out of each other for months.
Yeah.
And we're going to have what we haven't had in a long time, a brokered convention. So I don't think either of these guys, if they get to the Republican convention without a majority, I don't think either of them will come out of that convention.
Do you think that they're past the point where they would make a deal with each other because of the personal nature of where this campaign has gone with each of them in the last 10 days?
I think it would be great for the Democratic Party if they would make a deal with each other.
Yeah, right.
If those were the two people running against either Hillary or Bernie and whoever the vice presidential candidate is, I think it would clinch a Democratic victory. If that's the team, Cruz Trump, I think it's we're going to blow them away.
Dan, do you agree that Rubio is the toughest Republican to beat?
I think Leader Lang's right that John Kasich is a very he'd be a great candidate for Republicans to nominate. I think Marco Rubio has a lot of surface charm. He's, you know, young, attractive. He speaks well, but there doesn't seem to be as much depth to him. But Kasich, you could just tell he's more seasoned. I think he appeals as, you know, just a better person that would likely be a better president. And from my perspective, he's a little intimidating because he didn't take the party line. He accepted Medicaid. He didn't throw tens of thousands of people off of health insurance like most Republican
governors
did.
Well, that's why
he's
wallowing in the middle of the pack.
Right.
Middle. He's at the bottom of the pack.
But he's got a good story to tell. Hey,
in New Hampshire, he's hanging in there.
There's no such – first of all, I think all of us at this table, and we should remind your listeners of this, all of a national poll at this point
right.
in time, and it for the last 10 months, for the last 12 months,
anything.
Has been meaningless. So the only thing that matters are, because what happens in Iowa impacts New Hampshire, what happens in New Hampshire impacts South Carolina and Florida and the states that come after it, and these things can all be entire game changers. So, you know, and that's not to say that, you know, Trump isn't going to win or Cruz can't win or any of this stuff. Any one of the people in there right now potentially could win the nomination.
But let's talk about, because I think, and I've said this on the program, and I think I like John Kasich. I think John Kasich would be a great president. John Kasich has done okay in the debates, not great. He tends to be a little too repetitive over and over. He's it's enough already. I know you're the son of a mailman and your mother doesn't speak English. I know that. Stop it.
Exactly.
But he's not jumping off the page. He's not jumping off the page. Rubio has had very good debate appearances. I think he's either won or been second in every debate I've seen him. And he's not jumping off the page.
Which I'm surprised.
I am surprised too. Mm-hmm. But let's role play here.
Yeah.
Why is he not jumping off the page?
Because there's an anti-establishment base within the Republican Party that
That's
wants
right.
to punish
That's right.
the establishment for what they've done.
In other words,
and he's looked at, based on his, you know, cozying up in the Gang of Eight and Amnesty, as somebody that might be risky. But yet he still has to overcome that.
Exactly.
Now, in this election right. cycle,
he
has the possibility to do that.
I'm going to ask this question, and everybody can respond. Is he too young? Is he too articulate? And is he too attractive?
No.
Is that held against him?
No.
I don't think so.
Because you're saying that Kasich has maybe a little more gravitas.
You know why? Tim's
but
right.
Kasich doesn't have the spark that a Rubio might have.
But when you get to a brokered convention,
yeah.
spark won't matter. What will matter is we have to get out of Dodge. We have to nominate someone. We have to try to nominate someone we can elect.
I want to just throw an idea because I've thrown it out for 3 of the last 4 weeks. I want to throw it out to this group. Depending on what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire, assuming that New Hampshire or Ohio or Iowa is going to be Trump or Cruz. That's at least the conventional wisdom. So whoever finishes third there is going to be in the headline somewhere, subheadline. If that person also ends up second or third in New Hampshire, where Trump looks like he has a huge lead, it's going to just reinforce him as the candidate. I'm wondering, because there's a long road from there to South Carolina and the rest of the way, what would you think of Rubio and Kasich teaming up, just like Reagan did when he picked Schweiker. They get together and they decide to run as a team.
I don't think Rubio needs Kasich.
I think there's something. Does Kasich need Rubio?
Oh yeah, Kasich needs anybody.
More Kasich needing Rubio at this point in time. But then we don't know. Look, you want to talk about jumping off the page? If the headline is Kasich ekes out win over Trump in New Hampshire, that's going to be jumping off the page, and all of a sudden everybody.
Well, if you beat Trump, I'm not saying anybody that's going to beat Trump in New Hampshire.
So we don't know what's going to happen yet. But here's the thing. All of this stuff is happening because there are four or five quote-unquote moderates that are somewhere along the Republican side of the definition of moderate, and they're all splitting the vote. The anti-Trump vote in the party is so much greater than the pro-Trump vote in the party that it isn't even – that you wonder why –
That's true anymore. You know what? Because the Republican base, and Tim alluded to it, they're not interested in governing. Right, they're interested in burning it down.
Yeah, I disagree.
There's a huge difference.
The thing is, this is where I think that Cruz is a closer. When you talk about Goldwater, Cruz is the comparison with Goldwater, not Trump.
Yeah, Cruz is
Trump. Yes. Listen to this one. Trump is more the comparison with Eisenhower. Could have run as a Republican, could have run as a Democrat, didn't really know what his position was.
I think it's more like he's a comparison to Perot.
Say again?
That's interesting.
He's a comparison to Perot, not Eisenhower.
So I want to say this again. If it becomes a brokered convention.
Stop. We're going to finish that in a moment. Back Charlie to Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Before the break, Lou Lang said, if there's a brokered convention, finish it, Lou.
It won't matter who does what in any of these primaries. They could pick anybody because what Republican voters who are mostly ideologues do in a primary is a lot different than what delegates will do at a national nominating convention. They're more concerned about how do we elect a president. The ideologues that vote in Republican primaries are more concerned about getting the raw meat that we want to vote for. So the Trump and the Cruz people have an axe to grind, and they're grinding that axe, but the delegates won't necessarily do that.
See, I think the last week has really sort of crystallized. There is a big difference between the Trump voter and the Cruz voter.
Agreed.
There really is. The Cruz voter, as I said, Cruz is the equivalent of Goldwater, because the Goldwater people, it was rule or ruin. We want to take control of the Republican Party, and if we can get elected, we'll get elected. I think the Cruz people are much more interested in taking control of the Republican Party and exercising its support, you know, whether they want to throw, you know, a Paul Ryan out. It's much more about that and solidifying a cause than it is about actually getting elected. They of course, say they want to get elected. Whereas Trump is not an ideologue. I don't believe he believes half of the things that he says. I think he's a populist. He says things, and which again, I don't mean to suggest that Eisenhower was a populist, but I mean Eisenhower was not known as a Republican or Democrat when he was basically drafted. The conservatives were upset because, you know, they rolled over Bob Taft of Ohio because they thought they wanted a winner. And I think what people are saying now is they are beginning to think that Trump is a winner. And I think the other split here, and I'd be interested in you because you've told me before the break, is, you know, the Tea Party people, they're like all over the map. I mean, some are for Trump, some are for Cruz, some are for Rubio, some are for, you know, Huckabee. I mean, they're like all over the place.
Right.
What I look at the battle between what's happening in the Republican Party is there's the Saturday night Republicans and there's the Sunday morning Republicans. And the Sunday morning Republicans go to church and read their Bible, and the Saturday night Republicans are playing bingo and going to the casinos.
That's kind of...
Sometimes it's the same people. You had to go to church with me.
Could be. But what do you think of that description?
Well, that's actually very close to the point I was trying to make, is that everybody says who the Republican base is. And I concede that the Republican, quote-unquote, base is in flux. So we don't know where it's going to end up or what it's going to do. But the fact of the matter is that the Sunday morning Republicans, as you put it, are probably much more likely to be in the I'm not sure about either Trump or Cruz camp than they are to be in one camp or the other, although Cruz does have strong evangelical support.
I think it'd be for Cruz.
Well, it's...
Because Huckabee just hasn't happened.
I'm not talking about Huckabee. I'm talking about the Sunday morning Republicans who go to church in suburbs like Menlo Park and River Forest and Lake Forest, Illinois, not the ones who are going to, you know, the more rural ones. I'm as conservative as Tim is on almost every issue. The fact is, I'd love to see a country that would elect Ted Cruz president. I just happen to live in America.
What's left of it, I guess.
You know,
well,
we
here's
can,
the thing,
we
man. This comes from this argument. You know,
part of this is a cultural.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
A cultural divide.
Here's the thing.
There's the country club Republicans, and then there's the bingo hall Republicans.
Right, and that's okay. But you know what? We've swallowed the pill long enough. If it was left up to some of the folks that say what Bruno says, we'd have a President Dole, a President McCain, President Romney.
We'll have a President Clinton.
Well, you know, they had every chance. And
I'll take President Romney over Barack Obama any day of the week.
They didn't get there. That's the point. And this same – well, that's fine.
Ted Cruz.
Lou?
So what's really interesting is that the bingo Republicans have been taken advantage of by the country club Republicans.
Yes.
And yet – They're in some sense locking arms because they dislike what's going on in Washington. That's their privilege.
Exact same things going on in your party, Lou. That
may be true. That may be true. But the very people who suffer at the hands of let's call it rich country club people who want to run the country and rule the world for their own purposes. Mm-hmm. The very people getting hurt are those bingo Republicans, and the bingo Republicans haven't figured that out yet. And they're going to vote Democratic.
Lord.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Sid Blumenthal and Hillary Clinton can run things for them.
But the point is that in this scenario or this description I'm talking about, the Sunday morning and the Saturday night, is that when the National Review comes out and does a special issue just ripping Donald Trump apart, I think every one of those pages was a boost for Trump to the Saturday night Republicans.
You're darn right.
That's right.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? When is
those guys never heard of the National Review?
They've never heard of the National Review. They don't know what it is.
That's right. And to Leader Lang's point, I think our debate in the Democratic Party over whether Bernie might be more electable than Hillary is that clearly taking on Wall Street, calling to break up those banks, taking on the billionaire class, that are Republican country club people that are making the lives of the bingo Republicans much worse off. I think that's a message that's going to bring these Republicans over, especially if you get somebody that is, you know, part of the billionaire class, especially Donald Trump, that could say, look, if you want to stand up against the people that are hurting your wages and finally stand up against Wall Street that's been taking all the money, Bernie Sanders is your guy.
So and you may have a point
appeal,
there.
The appeal. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Now, I think your point is correct to the point to where when you ask why do these people vote for Cruz? Because it's the same mentality. They're not going to fall in with this thing. But I can tell you there's not the animosity against Trump that one would think. Mm-hmm. So I think as the primary, you know, falls into place, I mean, I'd be more than willing to work hard for Trump. I mean,
well, because the establishment is more fearful of Cruz than they are Trump.
Yeah, well, because he's been in, you know, he's been in the well.
Either
they've
more,
seen him act.
Either more fearful or they hate him more. But either way, Trump they're going to be able to cut deals with. But like those numbers that you showed earlier, Bruce, I mean, this is the whole thing, and I hope people think about this before they vote. The likelihood of either one of those guys to actually win a general election, as weak as Hillary is, and we haven't even talked about how unbelievably weak a candidate she is, but as weak as Hillary is, the likelihood of either of those two people, I think they're the only two people in the primary that can lose to Hillary.
By the way, let me just say this, and again, if you're a regular listener to this program for 30 years, you've heard me say this ad nauseum. You should, when you go into a voting booth, you should vote for who you want to win.
Yeah.
Forget what the polls are. You may be a Ron Paul fan. You may be Christie, you might be for Mike Huckabee, whatever it is. It shouldn't matter to you. Look at yourself in the mirror after you voted and said, have I done what I think is best for the country? That's what you should do. Forget the polls. I really believe it. Let's go to Sam in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, Bruce. I listen to your panel sometimes, and I really think that there's some things I don't understand. They're almost kind of delusional compared to the average person out here. The first thing about Marco Rubio, he is never, ever going to be the nominee.
Why?
They did a study of Republican voters this year, and much like Hillary Clinton was claimed, dishonest or a liar by almost 70% of the respondents, they asked for a phrase describing Trump, Cruz, and Rubio. The most often mentioned response for Donald Trump was bold. For Ted Cruz, it was true conservative. For Marco Rubio, it was typical politician. Go on the internet to any site, right wing, center, The Hill, Politico, Breitbart, Drudge, and read the comments when people say something positive about Rubio. He is not going to be the nominee. And secondly, when it comes to Donald Trump, here's Trump's appeal that people don't understand. The American people feel like there's been too much blood, too much guts, too much treasure spent and spilled around the world to build this country into something great, to see it turned into a third world sewer for their children and grandchildren. And they see Donald Trump as being the best agent for change. Have the bully pulpit, have the megaphone, not have to be behind the special interest, and to be able to go directly to the American people in somewhat of a tradition like Reagan did. They see him as being their best hope to keep that from happening to their children and grandchildren.
All right, let's let Dan Johnson respond.
Sam, the one thing that I think Trump has tapped into very well is he sort of sucked out the life of Rand Paul in critiquing the Republican establishment's fascination with war and invasion that costs us trillions. And I think Donald Trump has been very skillful at making it very clear he was against $4 trillion in this stupid invasion of Iraq. And Sam, your comment, I want to make sure this is what you're saying, that Trump taking a strong position against the Republican establishment, saying what a bad idea that was, that's part of his appeal. Is that what you're saying, Sam?
That's just a small part of it.
I agree with it.
The appeal is also the fact that you've got open borders, and people, why should we be invaded? Khrushchev said America was too strong and too great to ever be taken from outside because of the security of our borders and our defenses and our great economic system. But he said it could be taken from within.
Sam, let me ask this
in Washington, the corruption is destroying this country.
Sam, let me ask this question because you're from Austin, Texas. One of the things over the last 15 years.
Actually, I'm from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Bruce.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking up here. Well, then I'm not going to ask you this question. I'm going to, you know what? Because there's also a Sam standing by, and we're going to go from the Sam in Myrtle Beach, or go to the Sam in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. How are you, Sam, in Texas?
This is the real Sam.
The real Sam.
Yeah, there you go.
Let me ask you this question before you ask. Actually, you know what? We're running out of time. I'm going to put you on hold. You're going to be with us right when we come back. We've got to go to a break. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you a question about Hispanics in Texas. Remind me about that. We'll be back shortly from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny. And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Each same other
people. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Shush. We're going to Sam in Austin, Texas. And Sam, you have a question for me, but I want to ask a question of you first. The way in which the Republican Party in the state of Texas and the Republican Party in the state of California over the last 25 years is really it's night and day. The split between the party and the Hispanic constituency in California in the wake of Governor Pete Wilson's reelection effort, it really created a split that's never been able to be recovered. And yet in the state of Texas, Governor Bush and other governors that have followed, including your recent governors,
Rick Perry,
as well as even Ted Cruz, the relationship between Hispanics and Republicans in Texas is very, very different. So my question to you would be, how far can Ted Cruz really go to sort of drive that, you know, let's build the wall mentality? Doesn't that hurt the relationship between Mexicans and Texans in Texas?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I would say, I think if you look at the Mexicans in Texas.
And by the way, I meant Mexican America. I mean Mexican Americans.
Well, I'm sorry. To me, I'm half Hispanic. The Hispanic to me is a politically correct term that I don't care to use. I rather use Latino. But what I can say is that the Hispanics in Texas, a lot of them are cowboy types. They have what's called Tejanos in Texas. They're very hardworking. A lot of them wear cowboy hats and belt buckles and whatnot. There's a Hispanic population that is very much oriented towards that here in Texas that may not exist in other parts of the country.
Right.
So that might explain the uniqueness of the relationship here in Texas with Republicans, hardworking, sort of, there is their motto, self-reliance. And the Hispanic population here in Texas, a lot of them, the ones that are working hard, they are very self-reliant. They work hard. They're painters. They're in construction. And they self-sustain themselves.
So would they be supportive of Donald Trump? Would they be Hispanics or Latinos that are not offended by some of Donald Trump's strong rhetoric about building the wall?
I think they probably would be offended because they have a strong sense of pride too in their heritage. So you bring up a good sort of conundrum. But what I wanted to say on the show was,
sure.
I think that looking at the conventional polls that are being released about electability and whatnot, we can't really look at those now because what's happening is a cultural shift, and that's why Donald Trump is doing so well. It's not about electability right now. It's actually getting to the point where it's really about what someone will do, and there's a sort of a silent voice out there. I overheard somebody speaking, I don't know, in a restaurant recently, and they were speaking not very out loud about why they liked Trump, and they were obviously conflicted with being a Republican, but they said that they liked Trump for this reason. And I think the Democrats and the proponents of Obama in 2008 were very outspoken. I think this is a silent speaking of the American people with Donald Trump.
I agree with that. I think Trump is underreported in the polls for the reasons you just stated.
People are not going to be outlandish about supporting Trump. They're not. It's not correct. Not politically correct.
Bruno, do you agree with Sam?
I think the one thing I agree with Sam about is that that no one can predict. And if Trump is underreported in the polls and does better than what the polls are saying, then I think it's pretty much game over. On the specifics of the immigration issue, and I just looked at this for the today's show. This is American broad national question, all Americans. Do you want to deport all? Should they remain in the U.S. to work, remain in the U.S. to become citizen, or no opinion? 19% say deport all. Remain in the U.S. to work is 14%. Remain in the U.S. to become citizen is 65%, and no opinion is 2%. The idea that anti-immigration and anti-illegal immigration is this huge issue that all the Americans are angry about and they're all going to come flocking to Trump just isn't true. America is more of an open country, and while they might not like amnesty, they're willing to do some kind of a deal. So Trump is actually splitting the Republican Party on the one fault line issue that's driving everybody crazy. And for what?
Go ahead, Sam.
It actually is a very real issue, and that's what nobody wants to talk about.
You say that one more time?
The amount of people... The immigration issue is very real. It's a real problem for the system of our government, which is taking the burden of the immigration, the illegal immigration.
Okay, I can see your point, and I understand that it's a big issue, but this is a blind poll where no one is being caught overheard talking in a restaurant. 89% are for remain in the U.S. in order to work or remain in the U.S. to become a citizen, as opposed to 19% who want to deport all.
It's the 19% that are making up the base of Trump's...
They're making up the base of his support.
You're saying no, Tim.
I think the message he's sending loud and clear is he's willing to do something about it, where they don't believe that a lot of these politicians are willing
to do
anything.
Back to a question I asked earlier. Could he do something? If Trump was the president of the United States, how much would he get done of what he's promised through Congress? Would he get that wall built quickly?
I don't know.
We don't even know if he wants to build a wall. 2 years ago, he was pro-immigration and pro-amnesty.
He wants to build a wall, and he's going to make Mexico pay for it.
The last thing he said was he wants to build a wall, I don't know, 500 feet high, made entirely out of bricks, run it from Miami to San Diego with no doors in it, so you can't get in and you can't get out.
A beautiful wall.
And that's what he wants to do to the United States of America. Right. There's something wrong with that. But I think that the folks that are for Trump aren't thinking about immigration except when it's raised. Mm-hmm. I think the folks that are for Trump are just disaffected with America, disaffected with government as they know it. They think government is at the root of their problem. They think that if they have a problem in their life, it's come out of Washington or out of their state capital. That's why they're for Trump.
Gentlemen, we have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. Thanks to Sam and Austin. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289. We haven't talked about Sarah Palin. Well, I want to ask our Tea Party person, what does the Sarah Palin endorsement mean? How important is it, Tim Krilaitis?
I don't know if it is strong as it would have been a few years ago, but here's what I saw there just as a Tea Party guy. Somebody respects Palin. I mean, I got a few chuckles from across the table. Here's a woman that basically stood up in the grassroots, ran for mayor, won mayor, turned around, ran for governor, won governor. That's a success story. So, you know, half the people that laugh at her have achieved absolutely nothing. So with that being said, I can tell you that her announcement on Trump, basically I think her folksy attitude and the way that she kind of sells herself to the conservative base backfired. Because I think she looked
folksy.
She looked silly, and she was a caricature of herself. And that's coming from somebody that likes her a lot.
It did make for a great skit on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. Well, you knew that was going to happen.
Why? Why step in it?
Those sweaters are flying off the shelves. The sweater that she was wearing. Yes. What do you think? You've never been a big Sarah Palin fan.
Well, I was a big Sarah Palin fan for the short period of time between her very first speech, her coming out speech when McCain picked her, and when I was sitting in New York traveling with my wife, and I watched her on a Kate. If she couldn't handle a Katie Couric interview at that level as a vice presidential candidate, I rolled my eyes and I said, okay, well, that didn't work out very well. Does she deserve some respect for what she accomplished in Alaska? Yeah, maybe. But everything she's done since quitting the office in Alaska illustrates that she's not really worth spending a lot of time on.
I want to come back to Lou Lang. And Lou, according to some polls, Hillary Clinton could lose Iowa and could lose New Hampshire. What happens in the campaign if those two things happen?
Let's remember that Bernie Sanders has had a long time to work on just those two states. He's working on two states, working on them consistently, and has had much time to get his act together in those states. It would not be unusual, remember Howard Dean, it would not be unusual to have somebody come up from that you would not expect and do better than expected. Now, I'll say this. I listen to Bernie Sanders. He says a lot of things I like. And I listen to Bernie Sanders, and he's helped drive some of the debate, not only on the Democratic side, but on the Republican side. But Hillary Clinton will be the most experienced president we've ever had, and Hillary Clinton will
but
be a great campaigner.
But politically, in 2016, she will be a once-inevitable candidate who has stumbled at the first two times that people have had to vote. And then you've got South Carolina and Nevada. I mean, are they going to – I mean, what is it about that constituency that will save her? Because generally speaking, in campaigns, momentum tends to grow. And again, it doesn't – I mean, off the top of my head, I don't see a natural constituency for South Carolina Democrats to embrace Bernie Sanders. But if he's got Mo – Won't it work in South Carolina?
Well, firstly, I won't concede that he's going to win those two states. Okay. Admittedly, he's going to do well in New Hampshire. Whether he wins it or not is still an open question. He's from Vermont, right next door. They know him very well. Hillary Clinton's going to do very well in those states. And then we're going to move on to some other states where perhaps Bernie Sanders isn't quite as well known. The question for Democrats needs to be, who's experienced? Who knows what they're talking about? Who can get elected? Because we have a responsibility, if we're going to nominate someone, to make sure we nominate someone who can be elected. And who can go into the United States Congress and try to accomplish some things? We talked about that relative to Cruz and relative to Trump. What can they get done in Congress? I'm not sure that there's anybody more qualified or more able to work for compromise within the United States Congress than Hillary Clinton.
I want to look at the map here. Take me through. You're a delegate for Bernie Sanders.
Hopefully,
tell us. Yeah, you guys are running against each other. We should mention, by the way, in the North Shore.
We still like each other.
Yeah,
We're kind of running together.
You both want to go to Philadelphia.
We're both going to be for the Democratic nominee. Yeah. This I can promise.
But here's here's my question. South Carolina, and then the SEC primary with all of the southern states voting. Yeah. Where does Bernie Sanders get his legs? And how much ground game does he have going on in those states right now? Can he take advantage of the momentum that he may have coming out of New Hampshire?
I will tell you that the campaign is aggressively in states all the way up to Super Tuesday. There's staff and all the, you know, we do this phone banking and we're calling well beyond Iowa and New Hampshire today. I think it's likely to be a long contested primary between Secretary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I think this is going to be through March, through April. I think it'll be long and close. I think it's fair to say Secretary Clinton is still the favorite, but the momentum is clearly shifting to Senator Sanders, and people just don't know as much about him as they do about Secretary Clinton, who they've known since the 1990s. So as primaries come closer to happening, voters in those states start to pay more attention to who this guy from Vermont is, and they tend to like him.
If Hillary gets indicted,
well, that's not going to happen.
Do you believe? You hope
it's not going to happen.
It should, but it won't. If it does,
okay.
Do you think that Bernie Sanders becomes the candidate, or does the Democratic establishment find someone else to go in and ask her to step aside?
I will say this will not occur. She's not going to be indicted. But if in that fantasy land it were to happen, it's too late for somebody else to step in. Ballots have been set. And I think in that case, Senator Sanders is then the presumptive nominee.
Bruno?
Clearly, there's enough evidence we already know about that somebody, let's put it this way, maybe not Hillary Clinton because the fix is in or she has a nice big persona in politics, especially Democratic politics. But the fact is that the things that she has done, somebody else could already easily be under indictment. Indictment is easy. They could indict a ham sandwich. She could be indicted. But I think Dan's probably right that she won't be based on all the political stuff that's going on.
Are you going to go see the movie 13 Hours about the Benghazi raid?
You suggest that I do that, and I will. I certainly hope it's well done, fair, and objective.
I think it is. Her name doesn't come up.
And so we talk about indictment. Hillary Clinton is not going to be indicted. And let me also say this to you. I hear no Democrats, no independents talking about Hillary Clinton's emails. None. The only people I hear talking about Hillary Clinton's emails are Republicans looking to find an issue to talk about.
The Justice Department.
Yeah, the Justice Department is the FBI's looking. That's whistling past the graveyard.
The Inspector General of the United States is asking questions, raising questions.
We're talking about a Democratic primary for president. I hear of no Democrats talking about Hillary Clinton's emails.
Well, of course not.
That's an
indictment on your party, to be quite honest with you. You have somebody that's taken a server and putting it in an alternate location, and nobody's disturbed by that.
And on top of that, I'll also say this, that if to the extent that there's a big groundswell for Bernie, and I actually admit that I would like to see him be the nominee just to have a non-Bush Clinton election, and we've done our part.
That's
on
not
that.
The reason you'd but like no, to see him be the
well,
nominee.
I don't even know if he's more beatable, but I do think he's more honest. I think Hillary Clinton is one of the most incompetent. I mean, talk about experience. Yes, she has an incredible record of bad experience since the cattle trades in when her husband was running.
We have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, calls. Don't go away.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us from coast to coast and border to border and around the world. We're here every Sunday night on America's great talk radio stations and POTUS 124 on Sirius XM Radio. We're also on beyondthebeltway.com. If you have not gotten into the habit of checking out the video portion of the program, we're here every both hours are on the air. And then if you're watching us on Channel 20 in Chicago or CN 100 on Comcast, it's nice to have you with us tonight. We're on a variety of different platforms. Whichever one you prefer to watch us and listen to us, we're glad that you're with us. Let's go to John in Austin, Texas. The wind is blowing great into Austin, Texas tonight, listening to us on KLBJ, one of our oldest affiliates. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm glad to be listening to you all. I often listen to KLBJ all the time. These people that will follow Trump are not necessarily, and even Ted Cruz, I think, right now, are not necessarily looking for a new politician. They're looking for some leadership. We mistake the difference between being a president anymore and being a leader. We want to use those terms interchangeably, but they're not. We haven't had any leadership in a long, long time. George Bush wasn't a leader when we went to Iraq because he did not do the FDR thing and enlist America. The Hispanic problem in Texas is not a problem to most Texans. The idea that an illegal Hispanic can take the job, and we have laws on the books that would punish employers for hiring him, but those laws aren't being enforced, are the problem. We have an anti-war mentality in the United States that the general population doesn't want to go to war. Neither did they in 1939 and 1940.
No, they never do. They never do.
No, they don't want to. And in order to enlist a population to do something that's can you imagine if your boss came in this morning and said, okay, well, I understand y'all might not want to do radio today, but y'all watch porn and do whatever you want to do under your desk. As long as we don't see it, it's going to be all right. It takes leadership.
John, I want to ask you a question, and everybody that's listening to the program, maybe you talk back and you answer the radio or call us up on the phone and tell us your answer. If Donald Trump was president of the United States, would he be quick to use military action, or would he be slow to use military action? What do you think, based on what he says and based on his record? Do you think he would be quick, or would he be slow to use military action?
I actually think that he would be more like FDR, and he would be moderate in using the military action in a way that his advisors would tell him to do. And that's
okay,
what he
stop.
Does.
Stop for 1 second. Stay right where you are. I want to get everybody's reaction to that question. Bruno, what's your answer to that question?
I don't think any of us. First of all, I don't think Trump is authentic, and I don't think he's genuine. I think he's very smart, and he's played a fantastic game.
But what would he do? But what would he do?
I couldn't begin to guess. But if I were to guess based upon the way he talks, I would say he would be fast to do quick, dirty operations, and he would probably be too tepid to do anything really big.
Tim, what's your answer to just that question?
Yeah, I think he carries a big stick, and he would probably carry a big stick with that subject.
Lou,
I have a different point of view. I think he'd make a lot of noise, be very bombastic, jump all over the place, scream and yell, and then say, but I'm smart enough to negotiate this.
Given the fact that he was the loudest voice against this most successful foreign policy deal in the last few years, when we got rid of nuclear weapons in Iran without losing a single drop of American blood, that he was so against using successful diplomacy, I'm going to disagree with Lou. I think he'd be an atrociously bad diplomat, and I think since he's been banging his chest...
Answer the question, he would be a hawk.
He'd be an incredible hawk, because he says he's going to be the most militaristic candidate on the stump.
Even though he was against the war in Iraq.
Yes, because he keeps saying, I'm the most militaristic guy you'll ever see. I love the military. He keeps saying that every speech he gets. You're not going to find somebody who's more militaristic than me. Every time he says it.
I'm going to answer my own question this way. And it sort of speaks to what Tim has said. I think he would be tough in small battles where he knows he could win. Not unlike Ronald Reagan, Grenada, as an example. In other words, if it's a small thing, you can show military might and you know you're going to come away with a victory, you use it. If it's a bigger fight, against the Soviet Union or against someplace else in the world or, you know, reacting to, you know, the murder of Marines at U.S. barracks in Lebanon, not so fast, not so fast. So I think the fast lip would give one signal. I think the reality is, and whoever said it, I think it would be more like FDR and would be more moderate in his use of military action. He would not be flippant.
You know, there's a big disconnect. And you could hear Sarah Palin say, we're going to go kick some ISIS ass and we need to be strong again. And there's a huge disconnect between the facts and reality that we just had a triumph of American strength to get rid of Iran's nuclear weapons. But Republicans in the base, they hate it. They think somehow it shows a sign of weakness. So this idea that Republicans are great at foreign policy and somebody like Donald Trump is going to show strength, whatever that means, by throwing our military around in small battles, which is going to hurt American interests over the medium and long term, is one of the most fascinating parts of this primary. And because there's no connection between the successes of the Obama administration and the critiques of somehow weaknesses in America around the world that you hear from all these Republican candidates.
Here's what's funny about that is that I'm one of the few conservatives, based on my experience with being on Facebook and talking to people and debating people, I'm one of the few conservatives that basically stepped back and said, let Obama do what he's doing on Iran. Iran is a better country to deal with than Saudi Arabia,
right?
Blah, 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 so on and so forth. So I'm debating this back and forth with a friend of mine who's arguing with me all the time. And I go back to my website where I put some blog posts up in the late 2000s, right around the 2008 race. And you know who started that dialogue with Iran? Bush started the dialogue that was going on with Iran that Obama just concluded was started by W's biggest mistake was Iran tried to come back and get back into America's good graces right around 2004, 2005, and he was snubbed. That Bush snubbed him, and that was a mistake.
You're saying I'll W, the guy who said the axis of evil includes Iran? You're giving W credit for Barack's
I'll
incredible—
I'll send you the article because the—
Wait. The Barack's campaign against Hillary, which is another disagreement between the two, saying we should never fear to negotiate, we should speak to people that have traditionally been our enemies. You're trying to give George W. Bush some credit for that?
I'll send you the article. W was negotiating with Iran at the time that Obama that won the election.
Since,
I'll send it to you.
Since you evoke the name of George W., do you think it has been a mistake for Jeb Bush to keep him on the bench in this campaign. Tim, what do you think? Because supposedly he may be coming out and joining the campaign.
I think everybody's wary.
Of course it's not going to help. And what I think is that the ultimate thing to be said on this is when Will Ferrell got up and did the Saturday Night Live skit and said, I'll bet you didn't – I'm the smart one, and I'll bet you didn't see that coming.
John, final
just,
word
Jeff
to you.
Jeff just is awful.
Final word to you.
Yes, sir. Like I said earlier, leadership is unpopular in many cases. The necessity of our leaders to make decisions and make everyone get on board with that decision.
All right, I want to ask everybody, by the way, thank you for your call. You basically, you're a Trump supporter, so when the Texas primary comes forward, you're going to vote for Donald Trump, correct? I guess that's his answer. He's gone. My other question is, for those listening, is your definition of a true commander-in-chief, a true leader. Is there anybody else, is there any name that we have not discussed tonight that should be put up there as someone who I think is a significant leader? I think if you have not, if you've not maneuvered your way through the Republican primary process, that in itself indicates that you're not much of a leader because you haven't even been able to deal with your fellow Republicans.
Well, I see, as much as it's been a bombastic primary and we haven't even got our footing yet, that there's a lot of leadership on the Republican side. I mean, you look at folks, even like Rand Paul and Chris Christie and, you know, John Kasich. I mean, and then I look across the aisle and I see Hillary Clinton, who's being investigated by the FBI. I see a 74-year-old Euro socialist, and I see a guy that goes out and gets orange spray tan, and that's the best they can do. I mean, it's disturbing.
To your question, you know, the best definition of a commander-in-chief is one that never has to use our military to accomplish our objectives. I think Republicans...
Well, I don't think that's the best definition.
Yeah, look.
That may be a democratic socialist definition.
See, Republicans... right? Because Republicans
the average
like
American
war
doesn't say, I want a commander-in-chief who's never going to use the military.
Because why do you need to? If you can get what you need and get what you accomplish without using the military, why would you? That military is expensive.
Because the reality is you can't necessarily always get what you want without...
Right. You sure did in Iran. And look, every Republican thought it was horrible, and we got what we wanted.
When you turn around and give a country that basically helps to sponsor terrorism $150 billion, and you don't think that's going to come back to bite you? You made the comment, not one drop of American blood is spilled. And my comment to finish your sentence is yet. That's it.
Yeah. And guess and what?
And if they got $150 billion to do it, and you're pounding your chest.
If we followed your path, they'd be months away, not years away from having a nuclear bomb. Yeah, okay. This Republican bombastic love of war led us to the biggest foreign policy disaster in a generation. And you want to take us right back there.
Back shortly from Chicago, 1-800-723-8289. We've got two more segments. Don't go away. Don't fall asleep. Back shortly.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Before we go too much further, I want to just make a personal comment here. If you were a regular listener or viewer of this show for the last 20 years, a frequent guest on this program has been Lee Newcomb. Once upon a time, Lee Newcomb was the head of the moral majority in the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. He was then an elected official in McLean County, and he was always carrying the conservative cause. When Lee was on the show, all the Democrats knew they were really in for a fight because there was no one that I thought brought more passion and emotion to the discussion of politics. In fact, the last time that he was on this program, he was on speaking in support of Ted Cruz, who was his chosen candidate for the Republican nomination. In fact, Lee is a delegate to the nomination. The unfortunate thing that I report to you tonight is several weeks ago, it was reported to me that Lee Newcomb has come down with cancer. Oh. And it was reported late this afternoon that he's now gone into hospice. Oh. So for those who remember Lee as loving to talk more politics, probably than anybody we've had on this program, there was a real passion. And I know it will mean a lot to him that he will miss that Republican convention. But our prayers are out to him, to his family, in this very difficult time for them. But again, the memory of Lee Newcomb will live forever on this program. And for those around the country, I know frequently you would call up and you'd scream and yell because you agreed with Lee, or you'd send me emails because you didn't like what Lee had to say. But when Lee Newcomb was on this program, he defended his positions well, and the people on the opposite side knew they were in for a real fight. He was a fighter. He continues to fight tonight, and we wish him well and Godspeed. The other issue that I would like to discuss is this idea that Michael Bloomberg may run for president. How does that make you feel, Lou?
I mean, this is America. People ought to run for president if they want to. Dan can't. He's not 35 yet. But... but Mr. Bloomberg indicated that this was something he would be thinking about if the nominees were Trump and Sanders. And if it gets in under those circumstances, it could turn a lot of things topsy-turvy. Although I think in the end, we're going to be electing a Democratic president of the United States this
year. But does it also mean that this is sort of a lack of confidence in Hillary Clinton? That she's not one of the reasons why he's thinking of this is he's disappointed that Hillary Clinton hasn't been able to put Bernie Sanders away.
I don't see it that way at all.
I think
what it's really about is he's not a fan of Donald Trump at all, and he's not a fan of Bernie Sanders at all. And you notice he said if those were the two nominees, he might get in. And so he's just speculating. He's picking his way through this to see who picks up on that, who wants to get a hold of him, who wants to say, no, Michael, you got to get in sooner. We need you. We need you. That's what he's trying to do here.
I think if he ran as a third-party candidate, he would help Donald Trump.
You really can't say. First of all, Bloomberg is perceived probably to pull more votes from the left than the right, than the Democrats and the Republicans.
Sure.
Interestingly enough, another guy who's been making noise, and he certainly doesn't have Bloomberg's money, so he'd have a much harder time of it, is that Jim Webb has been talking. I mean, he's actually talked to signature gatherers and started looking at what the signature requirements would. And you know,
he was such an unimpressive candidate in the Democratic primary. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I've heard a lot of people saying that, but I mean, I don't know where he thinks he's got any more than, you know,
so
20 people.
Bloomberg would change some things up, but, you know, hopefully he does get
TV stations would love it.
Just what our country needs, another billionaire getting into politics. I mean, I appreciate what Michael Bloomberg's done to help fund a lot of the anti-coal campaign, which is helping to, you know, clean our air. But I think it lends to the narrative that we don't want America to become like Brazil, where there's very few rich people and a lower middle
class. I can just see a national campaign where Michael Bloomberg is telling people in America they can't have their big gulp of slush at 7-Eleven. They can't do it. Randy in Albion, Indiana, listening to us on WoWo. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Hello, sir. How y'all doing tonight?
Okay.
Good. I just would like to speak to the gentleman that thinks the Iran deal is a good deal. I mean, you can't honestly think that the country that calls us the great Satan, and they're over there laughing at us over this nuclear deal. You can't honestly believe, you cannot go to bed at night and truly believe that they're not sitting there laughing at us and going to have a nuclear weapon. If they don't have it now, will be very shortly.
They do not have a nuclear weapon. I'm delighted that President...
And you don't know that?
I do know that. You know how I know that? Because there are international inspectors that are actually in Iran right now. I know that they've poured concrete in that reactor, which doesn't exist anymore.
We have to give 24 days notice to. It's just another slap in the face that this guy's got us. They have to give them over 3 weeks notice before they can go in and inspect them. You cannot actually lay down and think that these people don't have that nuclear bomb or aren't going to have it shortly, and that they're not going to take that money and give it to fund terrorism with it.
I'll tell you what, Republicans are having
a great thing.
Randy, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question. The call screener identified you as retired military. Where did you serve, if I may ask?
I've been several places around the world, deployed in that kind of stuff. Been in the Middle East several times.
Okay, my question to you is, what is your solution to the Middle East situation?
You know, I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know that there is a solution right now. They, you know, so many different beliefs and so many conflicting ideas. I don't think they know what they want, if you want to know the truth. But I know giving Iran a nuclear bomb so they can threaten the entire region is just the silliest thing that's ever been done.
Except if there was no deal, they might still have a nuclear bomb.
No deal.
So
we made no deal.
Some of us at this table would disagree with you. But let's assume.
Randy, one second. Let Lou speak.
Let's assume that you're right. Let's assume that you're right. Let's assume there was no deal at all. Would we be safer in America today if there was no deal at all?
We're certainly not safer now because we gave them $150 billion to send terrorists over here and blow more stuff up. So we're certainly not safer now.
Who is your candidate for president, Randy? Who are you going to vote for in the Indiana primary?
I will vote for anybody that is not a Democrat at this point.
Well, I know, but you got a long list of people. Who are you going to vote for in the Republican primary?
I'd like to see Cruz, and if he couldn't get it, I'd certainly vote for Trump.
Okay, but if you can only vote for one, you're going to go into that polling place. You can only vote for one person in Indiana. Who are you going to vote for?
I would, like I said, Cruz if he's the man. If not, whoever, Cruz or Trump, either one.
Cruz or Trump
get the nomination.
So no, but when you go in there before you pull the, how are you going to decide at the last minute which one you're going to pull for? I really want to know this because you know I think you are an example of a lot of people around the country who were having that same indecision. Who do I vote for? Do I vote for Cruz? Do I vote for Trump? So I want to go a little bit deeper on your thought process. What's going to make you choose one over the other?
I would probably choose Trump over the other, over Cruz, because of his, I believe his foreign policy, anybody's foreign policy would be better than what we got now. But I do believe he's going to stop do what he can to stop the illegal immigration. You know, we've got too many politicians in this country that are too worried about how long they can stay in office. And we need somebody that'll stand up and say, you know what, this is what's right.
So his toughness and his style, Tim, can you go through that same process? You're not splitting between Trump and Cruz. You're going to be for Cruz or Rubio, you said.
Yeah, I lean that way. Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't have a problem.
What is going to be your deciding factor?
My deciding factor is I lean more towards constitutional conservatism, which Cruz espouses. You know, as much as I sometimes like the rhetoric and the boldness of Trump, I still don't know where he falls on issues, and that's important to me.
And you're deciding between Kasich and Rubio. So on March 15th, when the Illinois primary is in Illinois,
well, I'm a Kasich alternate, so I probably should vote for him. But
said Rubio first.
Good of you.
Everybody
out there, who is most likely to defeat the Democrats in a year where the Democrats are probably easier to defeat than they have been in the last couple cycles. And the fact of the matter is that Trump and Cruz, neither of them qualify as the best person for that. Rubio is probably – Kasich or Rubio for various different reasons. One has more gravitas. The other one has more John F. Kennedy type appeal, and that would be Rubio. But it just for God's sake, people, step back from the cliff, step back from running over the edge and pretending that 15 million conservatives are going to appear out of nowhere and create a Reagan revolution. It's not going to happen. Vote for the guy who can win.
Says Bob Dole.
Interestingly, that's what we say on the Democratic side.
This is our debate. This is our debate as well.
Our debate is who can win. And so those of us who support Hillary Clinton would say,
clearly she's the person with the experience and the background and a set of issues behind her,
to
and
win,
she can win.
She's got to win.
And we take
she's
the
got
view.
To win two places.
And so the Bernie position is we need to win back the House as well so that we can do some of the things that we all agree on.
Take one
on.
Thing at a time.
But in order to do that, we need to attract 10 or 15 million more people into the voting booth.
Right.
And it's largely Democrats that aren't voting in this country. So the guy
and
that
how,
can
well,
appeal.
How do we know this? How do we know this?
Well, because scientists measure it. The people that are voting less
that.
Are lower income. Absolutely. They're lower income. They're less educated. They tend to rent instead of own. These are Democratic
the
voters.
The less educated people are the Democrats?
It happens to be true. People that
I thought
have,
they said that yeah. was the Tea Partiers.
No, you know, it happens to be true. The less income the you have, the more you tend to be Democratic.
Well, but what is true is that here in Illinois, in our last gubernatorial election,
yeah.
we removed an incumbent, a Democratic incumbent governor from office. A Republican ran for governor, spent a lot of money, but he won less because of the money and more because Democrats stayed home.
Our Democrats, Lou Lang and Dan Johnson, our Republicans, Tim Krolaitis and Bruno Behrendt. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. And Bruno, this is our last segment, but I want to take a moment to talk about your pet issue is mm-hmm. education and choice in education. Why does that never get discussed at the national campaign level?
Probably appropriately so, because the federal government, quite frankly, with the exception of some research and some guidance and some issues that they might be able to develop, shouldn't have anything to say about education, which is why the centralization of education behind something like Common Core, which is a curriculum, it's essentially a standards wrapper to cover up a curriculum nugget, which is a mistake, having a national curriculum for 52 million of the most diverse people in the kids getting educated. So it's a big mistake. Frankly, American education performance has gone down since the inception of the Department of Education, not up. The idea that we don't spend enough money on education is absurd. We spend scads of money on education, and we waste a huge chunk of it on payroll instead of actually educating children. So I'm more than happy to talk about ways to educate. But that at the national level, the best thing you can do is to step back and say, we'll do what we can to help where help is needed, and that's mostly in low-income areas, and that's mostly giving low-income kids a leg up. And the rest of it should be not left to the states necessarily and not left to the districts, but left to the parents through choice.
I want to talk, Lou, another issue that we've discussed on this program for the last several months, since it's been a national issue, is the mayor of Chicago has become a national figure. He was a national figure before he was elected. Obviously, the Laquan McDonald case and the police issues of shooting in Chicago have become a national story, created federal investigators coming in to look at the way things are conducted. And I know that the former police superintendent Ramsey from Philadelphia is coming back to advise Mayor Rahm Emanuel, which I think is a good idea. Charles Ramsey, formerly from Philadelphia, but was overlooked by a previous mayor to be the superintendent. It's coming back to maybe help the city out. But there is a move afoot that there should be a recall for the mayor of Chicago. Is that something you support?
I don't support it at this time. First of all, to say we're going to pick one mayor out of hundreds in Illinois and possibly recall that mayor
and all the other mayors aren't included in that, I think.
Should they be included?
Well, I don't know.
If they were all included, would you support
it? If they were all included, I think it would be a better bill, but I want to think about this. So I'm not that big a fan of recall for this reason. We have something called an election. So some people want to talk about recall of people who have two-year terms like me, and that's fine. I could win that. But the point is we have something called an election. If you don't like your mayor, elect somebody else next time. Unless a public official has been shown to be a criminal, unless they've been shown to subvert the Constitution, I think we have to think twice about taking out of the hands of the electorate an action they've already taken. Now, it's different. Take the Rod Blagojevich situation, where we impeach the governor because he broke the law. We impeach the governor because he subverted the Constitution. That's a completely different ball game. So I want to hear from the representatives who proposed this. We haven't been in session for some time, so they haven't had a chance to explain to us what their motivation is, what they want the end result to look like. But it's going to be a difficult matter of proof for me to subvert an election.
Okay, let's go to a call. So let's go back to Pam. Listening to us tonight on the internet from Chicago. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, I agree with the previous caller, Randy. I really question whether or not Iran was prevented from getting a nuclear weapon. But my question is why the Republicans who are sitting there did not challenge that assertion rather than just letting it go by as if it was fact.
I mean, to Republicans' credit, you know, they voted to reject the Iran deal. I think it was unanimous that every Republican member of Congress opposed it. I happen to think this is great politically for Democrats. It's becoming ever clearer that Democrats are just better at foreign policy than Republicans. Republicans are clearly showing they like to invade countries. That's very expensive, but they don't really like to cut deals, as Donald Trump would say, that make both parties better off. And you know what's sort of behind it is kind of interesting. I feel like there are some people that just don't think other countries ought to be better off if they don't sort of look like us and act like us, especially a diverse country like Iran, where there are moderates that are desperately trying to get out of under the despotic rule of the mullahs.
Do you agree with that, Bernard?
The people that are in control in Iran have an apocalyptic vision of the world, and they will give nuclear weapons to anybody to make this ideal of them come true. So I don't trust them.
Pam,
I don't trust anything they say.
Pam, I think that it's valid not to trust Iran up to a point, but I'm one of the few Republicans that thinks the Iran deal was a good calculated risk that probably could have been much better negotiated. But where I come from on this is that Iran is a country that is run by some very, very bad mullahs and quote unquote conservatives. And there's also a very, very strong pro-American moderate element. And I think that there's times that you have to take risks. Clearly, one of the things that's going on right now with the oil prices has something to do with the Iran deal. Iran is actually probably a better and safer hegemon in the Middle East than Saudi Arabia. That's exceedingly dangerous. And why so many people in this country, conservatives and liberals alike, want to do anything with Saudi Arabia is beyond me. So all I'm telling you, Pam, is it was a calculated risks. And here's the deal. Because of the Republican Senate, it's not a treaty. And if there is anything bad about it, it can be reversed by the next president, you know, if they decide they want to do that.
Do you think they would do it, Tim?
Checks cleared. I mean, when you look at that amount of money that went to them, the check's cleared. And you know what? I don't think it was a good calculated risk. I think it was a calculated risk.
But guess what? Those checks were going. Those are mostly European. Those funds, the Europeans were going to drop their sanctions anyway. It was a global deal. It wasn't just to us and Iran. And so either we get some leverage with the Europeans that were ready to drop their sanctions anyway, or things just fade away and we, you know, could have been in that worse situation without it.
I have to go back where I was before. Without this deal, that we're at risk. Now, some would say, well, the deal's a bad deal. We're probably at risk anyway. These people can't be trusted. That's fine. But with no deal, it's all risk. At least there's a chance that this will work out. The President of the United States did a positive thing here for the safety of our country.
That was Lou Lang. The other Democrat this evening has been Dan Johnson. They are both delegates to the convention, one for Hillary Clinton, Dan Johnson for Bernie Sanders. On the Republican side, we've had Tim Krolaitis. He's a Tea Party Republican, and he is the township committeeman for Plainfield County. And Bruno Barron is with the Heartland Institute and is a man about town.
And yes, I am.
Thank you all for being on the show. Our thanks to Dan Dorfman and Fritz Goldman and Colin Bobbitt for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, Bruce Dumont, good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amling's Soteria Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown. Is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling.